You're listening to the Corruptions Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corruptions and criminal justice industry.
Welcome to today's Live Talk. I'm your host, Michelle Gasseau. Today, the Corrections Connection will be looking at drug testing technologies and their effectiveness. Joining us today to discuss this topic is Dr. Leo Khadijian. Dr. Khadijian is an independent biomedical consultant in Palo Alto, California, primarily lecturing and writing on clinical, scientific, regulatory, and legal issues in drugs of abuse testing. He's provided consulting services for a wide variety of both public and private sector drug programs, including state corrections agencies and local drug courts. His special expertise is with on-site testing programs, and he also provides oversight of the U.S. federal court's on-site drug testing programs. He's an internationally recognized speaker and has earned outstanding speaker recognition from the American Association of Clinical Chemistry. He's provided expert testimony in court and labor arbitration, and provided judicial education for the Federal Judicial Center. He also serves on the faculty of the National Judicial College. He was born and raised in Boston, and he received his bachelor's degree in organic chemistry from MIT and his PhD in biochemistry from Stanford University. So he's well qualified to talk with us today on this topic, and we welcome you to our live talk, Dr. Khadijian.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Michelle, and thank you for that introduction. I'm honored to have the invitation to speak to your audience today.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for joining us. First off, we wanted to talk a little bit with you about what the alternatives are that are available to corrections agencies for testing offenders for substance use.
Well, Michelle, there's actually been a dramatic increase in the technologies that are available to corrections agencies, and that includes not only availability of technologies that allow for testing on-site at the local agency level, but also a new variety of specimens, and I'd just like to outline some of those. I'm sure you're all familiar with urine as the classic specimen, which has the greatest historical established scientific and precedential value. But now we have technologies that allow the use of urine to be tested on-site. These are anything from benchtop analyzers to very simple dipstick-type devices or cup-type devices where the tests are visually read. Urine, of course, can always be sent to a laboratory to be tested. But now we have some other specimens that are being proposed and looked at for measuring drugs of abuse, and that includes oral fluid or saliva. And we have simple swab devices where one can collect a saliva specimen quite easily, and that can either be sent to a laboratory or also tested on site by some of these simple visually read devices. And remember that oral fluid or saliva has been used for testing for alcohol for some time, but they've now developed to test for drugs. Some other specimens that are getting attention within corrections agencies are specimens like hair testing, with the benefit of having a very long window of detection, as long as somebody's hair is, about how far back in time you can go. But generally, people are cutting hair and looking back about 3 months of time. At the moment, this is simply laboratory-based testing, but I was just at the Corrections Technology Conference in Boston, where we met, and there was someone who was promoting the potential availability of an on-site hair test. That would be very interesting. That comes to availability. Another alternative specimen is sweat patch testing. This is a Band-Aid type device that's put on the arm or the torso, and it can be left on constantly for about a week or so. And any drugs that are used by the person over that period of time will be excreted in the sweat and can show up in the patch, and then that patch is removed and mailed to the laboratory. So basically, it's like Big Brother is watching all of the time, constant monitoring, and that's certainly been used in corrections agencies. And one other new technology that's been promoted to the corrections community is ocular motor testing, or pupillometry. Patients basically looking at the eye and the effects that drugs have on the eye, and supposedly this is a simple way to determine if somebody's been exposed to drugs or not. And again, those technologies have been promoted to the correctional community. So you see, you have a variety of specimens, as well as opportunities to test both on-site as well as at the laboratory.
Now, are most of these devices, I think save one, are they already on the market and available for corrections agencies to look at and purchase?
Yes, all of the things that I mentioned are currently being marketed, except for the on-site hair test.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that was just shown to me for the first time at the meeting of Austin, so I do not believe that that is available yet. But all of these specimens and technologies are available for corrections agencies to use.
Now, is there a variety of these testing devices that you can that an agency or an officer could use sort of on-site versus some that still need to take place in a lab? Or?
Yes, as I indicated, some of the specimens lend themselves to the opportunity to test on-site. And there are definite advantages in many ways to doing on-site testing. Certainly the one that has been best established has been the use of urine specimens and testing them on-site with a simple benchtop analyzer. And we have plenty of case law precedent where the courts have found that these instruments are accurate and reliable and give results comparable to what a laboratory would provide. But we now have a whole variety of the non-instrumented urine tests available. These are simple dipsticks where one would just add the specimen to a cassette or specimen would be provided in a cup, and the result can be read as the presence or absence of a colored line in only a few minutes.
Mm.
I've actually performed three large-scale studies truly challenging these devices with difficult specimens and have published this research, some for the federal court as well as for the workplace testing program. And we've found in studies that these devices work amazingly well, not quite as good as an instrumented analyzer, but amazingly well. And I hold that these devices are certainly accurate enough to fulfill the due process requirements in corrections-based testing.
Okay.
Oral fluid, as I indicated, also has some of these simple type cassettes. There are just a few of those available on the market, but that has the benefit of an e-specimen collection, and it does have a history of alcohol use. Hair, sweat, that's not available for on-site testing yet. And the eye test is available for on-site testing, but there's virtually nothing published in the literature about the accuracy and performance of the eye test devices. I've just presented a single paper that's just been published recently.
Uh-huh.
So I look forward to seeing some more of those performance papers.
Now, for those that are available for on-site, do the results still have to be confirmed by a lab, or can those results stand on their own?
That's an important question, and it deals both on scientific as well as legal issues. And understand that I'm not an attorney.
Yeah.
I'm not holding myself out to you as
yeah.
an attorney, but
yeah.
but I do lecture on these issues at the Judicial College, and I spend as much time in the law library as I do at the medicine library, so I will comment on some of those issues.
Mm-hmm.
In correction cases, let's say we're talking about probation revocation or prison discipline, we have to remember that the standards required are on the order of the preponderance of the evidence or probable cause, which is less than 50% certainty. We're not generally talking about making criminal charges themselves. And there's no question that the on-site tests, whether they be done with an instrument or a non-instrumented device, certainly would provide sufficient accuracy to fulfill those due process requirements, the scientific requirements.
Okay.
Certainly for marijuana and cocaine testing, I would say that there's little requirement to do confirmation, although toxicologists certainly recognize that confirmation testing is a valuable thing. But these tests are so accurate, I would think that you would be able to fulfill the due process requirements for marijuana and cocaine. Of course, for amphetamines, there could be somebody abusing an over-the-counter cold pill, and you wouldn't know if it was methamphetamine or amphetamine or Sudafed. So you might want to confirm those tests. And the same is true for opiates. You wouldn't know if somebody was abusing codeine or heroin or if they actually just had a valid prescription. So for things like amphetamines and opiates, confirmation is recommended by the toxicology community. So it is variable, but I would say to look at your own state case law to see if you have examples where confirmation has been required or not.
Okay. How about the benefits of some of these alternatives versus others? And do some of these devices work better in detecting certain types of drugs? And also there's maybe some discussion about the windows of usage that are important to note.
We of course know that different drugs are used in different amounts, and that leads to issues of sensitivity. At what level do we have to be able to detect a drug to have a reasonable drug test? So if somebody's abusing fentanyl, for example, that drug is 6,000 times more potent than morphine. So people use very, very little, and accordingly it's very difficult to detect fentanyl. But the classic drugs that we are typically testing for, methamphetamine, opiates, marijuana, cocaine, these drugs are generally readily detectable by all of these methods. Some methods suffer a little bit in their detectability than others. For example, in oral fluid or saliva testing, very little marijuana shows up in oral fluid. And in fact, the only reason somebody would test positive in oral fluid would be if they recently smoked and had contaminated their mouth to that THC. And accordingly, oral fluid is a little less sensitive at identifying THC use than, let's say, a urine specimen might be. So somebody would be positive in urine for 1 to 2 days, whereas in oral fluid they might be positive for, let's say, up to 1 day, or maybe even less than. So there are some benefits and disadvantages, and maybe I'll say a few more things about that. Urine certainly is our standard. The drugs are present in high concentration in urine because the kidneys concentrate our urine before it being eliminated. So drug concentrations in urine about 100 times higher than in other specimens.
I see.
Hair gives us a long window of detection, but the levels are quite low, and that's why those hair specimens need to be sent to a lab. Sweat also can have relatively low concentrations, again requiring lab-based testing. The specimens each offer their own strengths and weaknesses from either ease of collection to detection time. But I would say that they're all reasonably similar in their ability to identify you, except hair testing does stand out because it gives you such a long window, the 3-month window of detection.
Sure. Well, good to know. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Dr. Leo Khadijian about drug testing technologies. Getting back to the differences in the different methods, what would you suggest agencies really look at when choosing a testing device? What do they need to consider about their own needs, or should they maybe think about also having more than one, depending on what their needs are?
Yes, an excellent question. Because of this variety of testing methods, agencies need to really think about what their programmatic goals are, what their respective budgets are. Are they testing at a single location, or do they need to have distributed testing, for example, at many small sites? If the testing is being done at a large center, a treatment center, or through a drug court that may have a large number of participants, then having an instrumented system can give economies of scale when you're testing many, many subject specimens. And right now, the instrumented systems are primarily using urine specimens. If there's an immediate result that's needed, if a court is going to need to be able to respond immediately to whether someone has used drugs or not, then, again, one would certainly look at using an on-site method, whether that be urine on an analyzer or urine on a dipstick or perhaps a normal fluid test. Perhaps ocular motor testing, the eye testing, pupillometry, when that has more performance data available to us. If you have many locations spread out around a given locale, you're having probation officers at 20 different sites, well, then you'd certainly want to consider the use of a non-instrumented device that can, you know, be carried around to many, many different sites. If there is no need for an immediate result, then of course lab-based testing can eliminate some of the personnel burden that exists by doing your own testing. But I certainly encourage corrections agencies to consider doing their own testing. The technologies have advanced to the point where even non-scientists can produce accurate and reliable results because the technologies are so robust.
Mm-hmm.
And in my studies with non-instrumented urine tests, for example, the dipstick urine test, we found that non-scientists produce results as good as any laboratory scientist was able to produce. So I encourage corrections agencies to consider establishing their own testing program.
Do agencies also need to consider legal precedents in the courts and about the use of some of these methods?
Yes, absolutely, because there can be many challenges to the use of these tests. Obviously, drug users do not want to be detected, and if they have zealous public defenders who are trying to protect the due process rights of their clients, then you need to make sure that these tests have sufficient scientific recognition to fulfill the due process requirements. Now, these are less stringent requirements than in a criminal case, which would be a beyond a reasonable doubt standard. But one should certainly ask if courts have looked at these technologies. We've had a Supreme Court decision in 1993 that addressed, U.S. Supreme Court decision that addressed the criteria for what courts should accept scientifically. And some of those criteria are, do we know the false positive rate and false negative rate? Has the method been published in the peer-reviewed literature? The scientists agree that this is a reasonable method.
Uh-huh.
And the courts can consider many other things. But those are questions that I would ask before I incorporated a test technology into my program.
Okay. Also, I understand that the federal government has some proposed new rules for drug testing related to drug testing in the workplace, and those rules talked about some of these devices. Do those new rules have any effect at all on what corrections or law enforcement agencies do?
I suspect that they will have some effect, but not directly. Understand that the federal workplace testing rules deal with testing of people in safety-sensitive positions who are working for the federal government, or also under the Department of Transportation workplace rules, you know, airline pilots and truck drivers. And because that testing is suspicionless in many ways, that is, it's random testing, the federal government has had to look very carefully at what methods it can use to comport with the search and seizure requirements of the Fourth Amendment. And just in April, they published a proposed rule, they have not been finalized yet, just proposed, for the use of urine in an on-site situation using both the dipstick as well as instruments. They proposed the use of hair testing in certain circumstances, the use of sweat testing in certain circumstances, and the use of oral fluid testing in certain circumstances. Now, this is a change from historical workplace testing, which was only done with urine and only at a certified laboratory.
Hmm.
The fact that the federal government is proposing the use of these specimens is an indication to corrections agencies that these methods have, in fact, reached a level of scientific development that they can be considered for this workplace program. So that gives them a corrections agency some assurance that these methods will be accepted by the court.
Right.
And the federal government will establish guidelines for how these specimens are to be used, how they're to be collected, how they're to be tested for adulteration or substitution, you know, what, how do you determine somebody's receiving the test or not.
Right.
And those guidelines can provide a lot of guidance to the corrections agencies. Now, corrections agencies are under no statutory obligation to follow these workplace rules, unless your state has passed such a law.
Uh-huh.
But again, one of the issues that will come up in any challenge, and you can rely on the fact that these workplace rules, which are considered the gold standard of drug testing,
right.
Support these. So although they won't directly affect what corrections agencies do, they do provide very useful guidance. And if you follow what goes on in the workplace, you can probably rest assured that your testing program will withstand legal scrutiny.
Not a bad place to go when you're trying to find guidelines for how to do this.
Exactly.
Great. Well, that concludes today's live talk. Thank you, Dr. Leo Kadasian, for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Michelle. I trust the information I've provided here in this short period of time will prove useful to your audience.
I'm sure it will. Thank you very much. And thank you also to our audience for tuning in. For more information on corrections technologies, be sure to read this month's articles on corrections.com. For CCNN, I'm Michelle Gasso.
You're listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.